The following podcast is an Oakville Chamber production.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of the Members of the Chamber podcast. Before we get started, we just want to thank our sponsor, Piper Foods. Members of the Chamber podcast is brought to you by Piper Foods and fueled by McCafe. If you're listening on your way to work, we encourage you to stop by any of the six Piper Foods McDonald's locations here in Oakville or look them up on any McDelivery service. I'm your host, Rachel Liang, and today I'm joined by Donald Goosey Salah, who is the program manager at the Ontario Chamber of Commerce. And today we're going to be chatting about the Discoverability Network. Donald, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
To get started, can you tell us a bit about yourself and the Discoverability Network?
Certainly. In my notes, it says that Donald is the Donald, which I know is not sufficient for these purposes. So, as you mentioned, I work for the Ontario Chamber of Commerce in their Discoverability Network program, which is a program that facilitates connections between job seekers with disabilities and businesses in order to address workforce needs. Prior to my current role, I built a supported employment program for job seekers with disabilities from the ground up for my previous organization, and I founded and continue to lead a collaborative network of supported employment programs operating across the GTA. It is a relatively large network. We have over 60 member organizations represented by a little more than 140 members.
Wow.
And the Discoverability Network was created by the Chamber in response to businesses stating that labor shortages were their number one barrier to growth and innovation. And so fortunately, this program was created in order to represent a viable solution for businesses by connecting them with a relatively untapped talent pool.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Now, to dive into the conversation a little bit, can you tell us about some of the biggest misconceptions about hiring people with disabilities and maybe debunk them a little bit?
I could do that. And of course, I definitely have some of those in mind. However, what I consider to be misconceptions or common misconceptions may not be what other people are thinking. So perhaps before I just rhyme off a couple off the top of my head, you could tell me some of the things that come to your mind that maybe seem incongruous with some of the statements that we make about how crucial it is to hire people with disabilities and why it's such a good policy for businesses.
Absolutely. Well, what we've heard from some of the business community is they're worried that there might be additional safety concerns or large accommodations that they need to put into place and that it might be a lot on them. Is that true or is that just really kind of a myth?
Well, those are actually two good misconceptions for me to debunk, so I'm glad you brought them up. I'll start with the accommodations one, because I think that's one of the larger ones. And there are a few different ways I could take this. But the first thing I'll mention is one of the biggest misconceptions is this idea that disability is strictly a medical condition and it needs to be fixed. And that's how it's often perceived, when the better way to look at it is a mismatch between the person and their environment. And addressing that mismatch is the accommodation. Businesses, as it turns out, are actually already experts in providing accommodations. They provide 95% of their accommodations, most of accommodations for people that do not have disabilities or things that are not disability related. So most accommodations are for family, child care, religious, and personal reasons. And when you think of accommodations that may not even occur to us, things like eyeglasses are assistive devices that have just been normalized in our society, hearing aids, another one. Accommodations for religious holidays, probably people don't think of Christmas and Easter and Thanksgiving as accommodations, but they are in effect accommodations for a society that was founded by Christians, even though we're a secular society. Nevertheless, the founders were Christian, and so those become our statutory holidays. If we lived in Israel, our statutory holidays would be Jewish holidays, or, you know, in Arab countries, perhaps Muslim holidays. So most accommodations don't have anything to do with disabilities. Going into some of the statistics, however, about accommodations for people with disabilities, 90% of them, or a little over 90%, are a one-time cost of $500 or less, so not prohibitively expensive, and 60% of accommodations actually cost nothing. They're changes to practices, processes, or allowances for people to perform their tasks in a different way so that they're able to do the job to the best of their ability, but they don't necessarily require any additional expenses on the part of the business. And I think with this misconception, one of the biggest challenges is that we talk about accommodations for people with disabilities as somehow a matter apart from accommodations in general, right? Businesses don't seem to flinch at the idea of accommodations unless it's talking about people with disabilities, because somehow it's thought to be different, but it's not. And as I said, most accommodations are for other reasons. To get into the other matter you raised, which is the, you know, aren't there safety concerns and that sort of thing? The short answer is no. I suppose that's the short answer. But Insurance premiums for businesses will not rise if they hire people with disabilities. And if, again, looking at the statistics, 98% of people with disabilities rate average or better on safety in the workplace. And I used to work with an occupational therapist who we were talking about this and trying to, you know, figure out, you know, why might that be the case? What would the, you know, what would the reason behind that statistic, you know, what would it be? And she put forward an interesting idea. Well, two interesting ideas. One, which is, I guess they both revolve around people with disabilities potentially being less distracted in the workplace. So one is we tend to pride ourselves on multitasking. Oh, great at multitasking. I'm just so good at doing multiple things at the same time. Well, the reality is none of us are good at doing things at the same time. And if you look into the neuroscience of it, which I realize is not what this podcast is about, although I would happily go into it if it was, technically none of us actually multitask. We just split our attention and therefore are just not doing, when we're trying to multitask, we're just not doing anything as well as we could. And that is one of the reasons that would lead to workplace accidents and things like that. Many people with disabilities are going to be more focused on what they're doing, right? They're just not going to be as distracted because they're going to be specifically focused on the task they're performing. And the other example that my occupational therapist friend used was, we were specifically working with some job seekers with autism that we'd recently got into a few different workplaces. And people with autism are typically not as social. And, you know, we may think of that as, you know, that's a bit different or something that's uncommon and has to be, you know, gotten used to in a workplace. But if somebody is not concerned with talking with all of their coworkers all the time, sharing, you know, conversations about sports or gossip or, you know, whatever was in the morning paper or their horoscope or whatever it may be that people talk about, they're going to just be focused on their work as opposed to focused on socializing, and their attention will not be split and they're less likely to make errors that lead to accidents in the workplace.
That was incredibly insightful. Thank you so much for providing those, the debunks of those myths.
My pleasure. If I can, one thing I would like to share.
That's absolutely.
Sort of the opposite of what you were asking in terms of misconceptions or debunking myths. This one is more of a fact that needs to be, I think, remedied, which is the diversity, equity, and inclusion conversation that
yes.
is going on, you know, very hot button topic these days and has been for years. But one of the things that is frequently absent from the DEI conversation is disability. And so I just wanted to point out, as I said, sort of, I guess this is debunking the myth that, of what DEI is. There cannot be diversity, equity, and inclusion without disability. Disability is the largest minority group in the population. It's about 20% or 22%, depending on which StatsCan report you go by. And that's a fifth or more of the population. And that's going to cut across all subsections of the population, all demographics. And so if job seekers with disabilities are not included in the DEI conversation, in businesses' inclusion policies, then DEI won't be achieved. It's always going to fall short, and it will represent a consistent disenfranchisement of all of those population groups, all of those equity-deserving groups that we're striving so hard to achieve equity for.
Absolutely right. Thank you so much for raising that. That was, those were very insightful points. And I think a lot of those will be really helpful for the Oakville business community who is looking to get involved and start hiring people with disabilities. So thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. That's good to know. I certainly wouldn't want them to listen to this podcast and think, well, that was not useful.
No, exactly. So that's kind of a nice segue into my next question, which is, what are some of the best benefits of hiring people with disabilities?
There are several, but I don't want to paint a picture of people with disabilities as, you know, supermen or superwomen or that sort of thing. I prefer to focus on complementary statistics. So there are a few things that I'll look at. One is people with disabilities tend to have, well, tend is the wrong word. I have a specific number for this, so not tend. They have a 72% higher retention rate. And
wow.
86% of people with disabilities rate average or better on attendance in the workplace. And the reason I choose those examples is because when you combine higher retention with lower absenteeism, and better attendance rates, then you're reducing overhead costs for businesses associated with the need to fill roles based on employee turnover or cover shifts based on absenteeism, which means more money that businesses have to reinvest in their business and to grow and develop. And again, that's why the Discoverability Network was created in the first place, was to address those barriers to business growth and development due to labor shortages and things like that. There are some frightening numbers of what absenteeism alone in the workplace costs businesses per year. I don't have the number committed to memory, so I'm not going to estimate, but it's large, and I would encourage anybody to look it up. Although I think, you know, a business audience probably doesn't need to look at the statistics to know that's the case. So that's one, right? Higher retention and lower absenteeism. I think those are very good reasons. Productivity is another one. People with disabilities, 90 to 93% of people with disabilities rate average or better on productivity. So productivity isn't a concern. But again, getting into more of a bottom line approach. People with disabilities and their loved ones and close relations. So that means not just family, but also friends, people who work in the field of supporting people with disabilities. That accounts for a little over 50% of the population. And that means that's over 50% of the marketplace. That's over 50% of your potential patrons. And there are studies that show again and again that people prefer to give their business to companies that hire inclusively, which is why one of the things that we encourage businesses to do is promote their success when hiring inclusively. We feature our business partners in webinars, we like to promote them in our newsletters, and we encourage them to promote their success as well, because you're more likely to draw that over 50% of the population to your business that knows someone, has a family member, a friend, or knows someone who knows someone that has a disability, and they're more likely to give their business and patronize those businesses that are hiring inclusively. So if you want to have a greater market share, if you want to have more return customers and that sort of thing, then it makes good business sense for that reason as well.
Right. Fantastic. Now, with the labor shortage that we're currently experiencing in Canada and in Ontario, many Ontario businesses have vacant positions that they're looking to fill, and there's this untapped pool of candidates. How can they get started?
Well, there are a few different ways. I mean, obviously, programs like the Discoverability Network, provincial-wide, we have an online job matching platform. We facilitate connections with partners that are supporting talent pools of disabilities. So it has, part of it is going to have to do with how you recruit, right? You want to diversify your recruitment and where you're sourcing talent from. So working with programs like ours, getting connected with employment service providers in your community, I guarantee there are employment service providers in basically every community, small and large. Large ones probably have more than one, that are supporting talent pools of job seekers with disabilities. And they also provide supports to employers through the way that they are supporting their candidates to get work. You can also look at job fairs such as Spectrum Works, which is a national job fair that occurs every April that is specifically for people with disabilities and businesses looking to connect with that talent. So in terms of sourcing and partnering and who you work with in your community, that's one way to get access to the talent. Another is to adapt your recruitment processes in general. Write more effective job postings. I'll use a very concrete example that isn't necessarily related to disability. I mean, it'll start off that way, but I'll get there. But job descriptions, job postings haven't really changed in decades, right? We still write this laundry list of qualifications or requirements or things we're looking for, most of which are probably not necessary. And in my previous role, when I wrote job postings, I was guilty of this too. My job postings needed to be consistent with the kind of job postings we had in our organization, and so I came up with this huge laundry list of things. I needed four things on that list. There were about two dozen of them. So, you know, that is what it is, what it is. But nevertheless, writing job postings that simply state what is actually required for the job. So for instance, a lot of jobs say that a driver's license is required. In fact, most of the jobs that I've held since I stopped working at a burger place when I was 19 required a driver's license. I went into construction when I was 19, requires a driver's license. I don't have a driver's license. I don't have a car. And no one has been unhappy with my performance on the job. And the reality is the jobs that I've taken include construction, my previous job as a supervisor of a supported employment program. They didn't actually require a driver's license. What they required was an ability to commute from one location to the other and remain productive during the day. And I'm certainly more than capable of doing that and doing it without a driver's license. So that's just one example. My colleague, Lisa, uses a great example, which is NASA posting jobs for an astronaut, and they have, I think, four qualifications. So if you need four qualifications to be an astronaut, I don't see why we would need two dozen qualifications to be a job developer or a sales associate,
right?
Or any of those sorts of things. So I know that's a lot about job postings, but that is, that is one way to attract more talent. And the sort of example I wanted to use that wasn't related to disability is when you look at statistics, men are more likely to apply to jobs that they don't have all the qualifications for. I don't know the exact numbers. I think it's if men have about, 60% of the qualifications or maybe a little less, they'll apply for the job. And maybe that's because we're presumptuous and who knows what else. But women are less likely to apply to jobs if they don't have at least about 80% of the qualifications. And, and that makes sense. On the one hand, you want to make sure that, you're qualified to do the job. But what that means is the traditional way of writing job postings is more likely to screen out women simply because they want, they're going to apply to jobs they feel they're more qualified for. And that has nothing to do with people with disabilities. So again, look at the practices and processes, consider, what you could do, not just to be more inclusive, but to generally make the postings, make the recruitment process more accessible for everyone. And, we can get into maybe some more of those examples a bit later, but those are some of the suggestions I would make.
Fantastic. That's some really, really great advice. And again, a very good segue into my next question, which is for employers who have now tapped into the pool of candidates and are booking some interviews, relating to disabilities, what questions are appropriate to ask in an interview?
Yes, that's a big one. So the first thing to remember is that you cannot ask someone for the details of their diagnosis or their health condition. That is confidential information that they are not required to share. What businesses can ask is whether there is a disability or other reason that may prevent someone from doing the primary part of their job or that might require an accommodation. They can ask how someone would perform the primary part of their job. The important thing, though, is to not assume that there are going to be barriers or that there are going to be accommodations required. I mean, certainly in a situation where, say, somebody with a mobility device is applying for a job that requires them to do 5,000 jumping jacks a day, then, sure, you may ask at that point, okay, so, how are you going to do that part of your job and see what answer you get? And they may tell you a certain type of, an accommodation is necessary. But if somebody identifies a barrier, so for instance, let's say the job posting says that, you need to be able to lift 20 kilograms repetitively during the day. And somebody says, I may not be able to do that. I can only lift maybe 10 kilograms at a time. Then a reasonable question is, well, what accommodation do you need? Or how can, how will you be able to perform the primary part of your job if that's a barrier? And if somebody does identify the need for an accommodation or that comes up in the conversation, then a business can ask for a doctor's note identifying the need for an accommodation. But again, it's important to note that the doctor's note is not going to specify the details of a disability or health condition. The doctor's note is going to say something along the lines of so-and-so requires an accommodation of such and such a nature due to, some medical reason or disability. It may not even be that specific. It may simply say this person requires an accommodation for various reasons. So I think it's important to not default to asking those kinds of questions just because we think maybe that a candidate has a disability or that there would be a barrier. A lot of disabilities are invisible, so it's certainly be disproportionate with respect to those conversations probably being asked of individuals who have physical disabilities because it's more visible. But it's also, again, not necessarily going to be the case that accommodations are necessary. Going back to my point about, 90% of accommodations or more, 95% of accommodations or whatever it was, being for people who don't have disabilities or for non-disability related reasons.
Right. Now, once a business has successfully hired a person with disabilities and they're working on getting them integrated into the team, does the business have to write up any special policies or anything like that?
Okay, so that's a really good question, and that gives me lots of things to say. Again, the short answer is no, because of anti-discrimination laws and the Accessibility for Ontarians with Disabilities Act, the basics should already be in place. What businesses should really be focused on is developing more robust processes and policies in order to make sure that all of their employees are successful. So to begin with, accommodations. starting with even before people hire, when you're looking at the interview process or the way you're putting statements to that effect in your job postings, you can use the language from the AODA when you're talking to new staff or when you're talking to people you're potentially interviewing. You know, we provide accommodations for everybody and so on and so forth, but that language is not gripping. It's not exactly thrilling. So it would be better to phrase it in your own way and to make everybody who's applying know that accommodations will be available, even that you're going to ask them if they require an accommodation. So for instance, providing interview questions in advance, allowing people to do interviews either written or verbally, or performative where possible. And the reason why I go through interviews right now is because I've done a lot of interviews, and probably everybody who's listening to this has too, both from both sides of the table, so to speak. And if we're all using the same old interview process all the time, then people know what to expect when they're coming into it. People are really good at answering interview questions. That is not going to help you necessarily hire the right person. So to begin with, make your processes flexible. And this is going to be a theme throughout everything that I say. But beginning with the interviews, if you're letting people interview in a way that plays to their strengths, that makes sure they can present themselves most effectively, you're going to level the playing field a bit more, and you're going to make better decisions in terms of hiring the right people. And what you'll notice for a lot of suggestions I'm making is they will be beneficial not just when it comes to hiring job seekers with disabilities, but many other groups as well. People with English as a second language, people with different learning styles, people perform tasks differently in order to be more effective than, you know, not everybody does everything the same way. So when it comes to getting into the workplace, again, put an accommodation plan in place for everybody. If somebody doesn't need an accommodation, the accommodation plan could simply be no accommodation is needed. But when new staff are being onboarded, it's a good idea to just ask, are there any accommodations that you require? And then once that conversation has happened, you know, review it annually. Generally, performance reviews are a good time to bring it up. But this way, it's integrated into the process of onboarding someone. You're not getting somebody into the workplace and finding out that, you know, oh, they may need help here. Oh, they may need to change up this process. You're getting a sense of what they need right from the beginning so that they can be as productive for you as possible right from the start. And even beyond accommodations, when I talk about flexibility and practices and processes, once people start, look at what their strengths are. I know we typically take a one-size-fits-all approach to employment. You know, we want everybody to do everything. That's the way most job postings and job descriptions are written. That's the way most of the jobs I've had functioned, is, you know, you're expected to do everything. And, you know, that's fine, that's fair, I get it. But at the same time, if you're able to play to your employees' strengths, you're going to get more productivity out of them. And so as an example, if you have two staff and, you know, technically they have the same job description and one is better at 70% of these things, but not so good at this 30%, and the other person is good at, you know, maybe the things that the other person isn't very good at or has trouble with, you have them do, you know, spend more of their time on the things that they're better at. And I'll use a more concrete example. I worked in retail for a while, and at that time there were two of us that were sort of the managers of the store. And I was really good with stock, right, with small spaces and getting all of our stock organized and whatnot. And the other manager was very good with customers and cash and all the on-the-floor stuff. And although the owner of the store and I had something of a tempestuous relationship, which I will not go into right now, she understood that it made more sense for us to do the things that we were, you know, more effective at more often. So I spent, you know, 70% of my time, 75% of my time in the stock rooms during my shifts. And I worked full time, it was 44 hours a week. But our stock rooms, my goodness, were they organized? It was really easy to find things. And the way customer service operated on the floor was seamless because our other manager was just brilliant at that. And I would be brought out from the stock rooms to do the other things, which I was still capable of doing, just not as efficient at, when we were really busy. Right, and vice versa. If I was not available or if I was sick, then somebody else might do the stock work. But it was a very efficient way of running the store, especially a small store, you know, it was an independent business. And it made very good use of the skills of the staff that she had. And when the other manager left and I couldn't spend all my time in the stock room anymore, aside from my general disappointment at that, things were just not as efficient because I was capable on the floor, but not as efficient as the manager who had left. And the new staff we'd brought on, no matter how much training you gave them, stock was not necessarily their primary skill set. So again, looking at what your employees' strengths are and how to play to those strengths so you get the most out of them. And that's going to be beneficial for anybody you hire. Adaptations you make in the workplace considering people with disabilities are going to be effective for other groups. I mentioned newcomers, so you think of maybe people with English as a second language. You know, if you're adapting processes to rely less on written communication, then people with English as a second language are going to have less difficulty understanding instructions because they're not necessarily going to be having to read as much text in a language they're not familiar with. Different learning styles, which we don't even think about with respect to disability. I mean, we grow up in school being told there are all these different learning styles, kinesthetic and visual and so on and so forth, and maybe there are four or maybe there are eight or however many there are. But if you are providing flexible processes that play to people's strengths, then you are going to get more out of your staff, regardless of who they are or where they're coming from.
Amazing. I think this conversation has laid a really great foundation for businesses to start exploring this world if they haven't already, or given them some great next steps if they're ready to get started. Now, if a business has any questions throughout this process, can they go to the Discoverability Network for support?
Of course, that's what we're here for. All of our services are free for businesses, and we have a variety of them. We operate an online job matching platform, and that platform will match candidates to jobs based on fit and preference. So based on fit with respect to qualifications for the jobs as specified by the employer, and based on preference in as much as job seekers are matched to jobs that are within industries they have expressed a desire to work in. So as a business, you can be sure that the job seeker has some of the qualifications you're looking for and that they actually want to work in your sector, and you'll be able to see how they match up to your job when they apply. Beyond the job matching platform, we provide free training on a range of disability and employment related topics. There are dozens of them, so I won't go through them, but they're things like accommodations and disclosure, hiring and retaining talent, a roadmap to doing it successfully, and so on and so forth. We also provide consultation to businesses on practices and processes and providing curated suites of tools in order to support their success and resources to help them develop their processes further. So we're happy to work with them and look at how they're operating their recruitment process and what could be modified or what might be a way to do it more successfully. We host several events, webinars, networking events, an annual business conference that brings all of our stakeholders together, provides success stories as, again, tools and resources and whatever else may be available in order to support everybody's success. And we'll also connect businesses through talent in any way we can. We work with employment service providers, post-secondary institutions, school boards, secondary school boards, high schools, and we can help businesses connect with talent through all of these various sources so that there is a wider net being cast by their postings when they're working through us. It's not just the job matching platform. It's that they get the advantage of all of our, all of our networks and all of our partners in order to access as much of the labor pool or talent pool of job seekers with disabilities as possible.
Amazing. And for our listeners at home, we encourage you to head to discoverability.network to learn even more, or you can always reach out to the Oakville Chamber and we're happy to connect you. Donald, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and for laying this amazing foundation for our Oakville businesses.
Once again, it's my pleasure. I certainly would encourage any of the businesses to reach out to us and look forward to hearing from them. And I appreciate the opportunity to see people in living color. So thank you
yes.
for inviting me here today.
Thanks for tuning in to the Members of the Chamber podcast by the Oakville Chamber of Commerce. Connect with hundreds of Oakville businesses and learn more about what we do at oakvillechamber.com.